Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second. He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now Chael Sonnen's on PodcastOne.com. And for that, you're welcome.
What's happening, guys? Happy Friday, part two. I'm still joined in studio by Luke Barnott. Luke, what's going on? What's changed in the last 5 seconds since we talked last? Exactly.
I got a Powerade. I think that's about it.
You got a Powerade. So we were sitting down here. We were just scanning the websites. Chuck Liddell had come out. I think he was on Ariel's show. I think it was the MMA Hour. But he just kind of talked about his UFC job. And before anybody gets ahead and thinks this is old Chael trying to pick a fight with Chuck Liddell, wrong. Actually not telling you the story from the headline. But he did come out and he finally talked about his UFC job. And he was pretty candid. I didn't think he had too much sour grapes. I think he took a little bit of heat that maybe he didn't deserve. He just answered Ariel's question, but he did say, look, I was promised this job for life. So I kind of took it bad when it was over. You know, only a few guys got those jobs. Chuck, Matt, they came in together. Later, Nogueira, who I believe also was cut from the Brazilian with the bye, but also Forrest. Mm. Forrest is still there. Do you know why Forrest is still there?
Because he works.
Because he actually showed up for work, yeah. Right. But it's actually a really cool story, and I think Forrest deserves some credit for it. Now, is he well compensated? Yeah, bet your ass he is. But it was still a cool move by Forrest. When Dana gave him these jobs, this was just a thank you, man. You were loyal soldiers. You were there for us when we needed someone there for us, and we're going to remember you. They were given these expected to do absolutely nothing. These were gifts, man. Beyond gifts, $30,000 a month, stay at home, rest of your life. Well, Forrest goes, no, not so fast. I'm not taking a check and doing nothing. Your office is in Vegas. I live in Vegas. If you're paying me, I'm coming in. So Forrest started showing up every single day. And he had nothing to do and nowhere to do nothing at. So he would like find a cubicle or a space that was open and just sit down. And he'd read the newspaper. And then some days he'd come in and he'd surf the internet. And some days he'd sit there and then he'd eat his lunch. But the bottom line is he was there. And before you know it, after a number of months of Forrest literally just sitting, somebody finally grabs him and goes, hey, we're going to have a meeting on such and such. Do you want to sit in on it? Forrest says, yeah, what time? It's in like 40 minutes. Forrest runs home, showers, shaves, puts on a suit and comes back. Sits in on the meet, takes notes. So all of a sudden, people are going, wait a minute, this is a real dude. He just hasn't been asked to do anything yet. So before you know it, there's another meeting. Forrest gets invited again. Before you know it, there's a meeting, and now there's an assignment. Forrest, could you handle? Yeah. So he goes out and does it, and he does a spectacular job. Fast forward a number of years, the company sells. All those jobs are gone except one, Forrest Griffin. And I think that's a cool story, and I think that Forrest deserves some credit for that.
Yeah, I mean, Forrest, I've had a few interactions with him, and one time we were in Germany when I was doing a UFC event in Germany, and he was like representing the UFC. So he'd go to all the foreign lands and talk to the TV and do whatever. And he really wanted to work hard. Like every time I saw him, he was into it. I mean, he likes a beer too, so he'd go out for a few drinks, but he'd always turn up and want to do it. And we had to do this TV thing in Germany. I think it was me, Cub Swanson, Forrest, and a couple of Irish guys. I can't remember exactly who. And we were there. And I like to wear a suit and look good or whatever. So I'm always dressed up. And Forrest was wearing like a t-shirt and jeans. And we were on TV in Germany. And the guy, I remember, because he's just on some random TV show. They don't know MMA. They didn't know who Forrest was. Didn't know anything. And he was like the guy representing the UFC. But because I was wearing a suit jacket, every question was getting asked towards me. And I was like, maybe you should ask this former world champion just here, Mr. Forrest Griffin. And I had to like introduce him. And ever since I did that, he's always like been super nice to me because I like, you know, I didn't try and keep all the limelight, sure, or whatever on TV. And I handed it over to him and he was like, and he said to me after that, he goes, man, maybe I should start wearing a suit jacket when I go and do these things. And ever since then, he's been wearing it. And, He's a funny guy. I'm glad for him. Happy for him.
I'm happy for him too, but I do think that there's a lesson in that. You know, there is a major lesson there that everybody could. What is the lesson? How do I articulate this? You know, there was a gift horse handed to you, and you know, you could either just take it and then all of a sudden you feel entitled and think you expect it when it was a gift in the first place, or you can do what Forrest did and go, no, not so fast. If you're going to pay me, then I owe you something. I thought it was a cool move. I'm glad that he's still around, And, you know, from the people that I talk to over at the UFC, he manages stuff. You don't just give it to him and it falls through the cracks. He does a good job. And Ari and Dana, they recognize it. Boom, Forrest is still there. I'm happy for him.
Now he's in charge of the performance center, right? I think that's what he's doing now.
I think that's right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, guys have different titles, and so you hear it, but you never really know what it means. Like, you know, the top guys at the UFC, and I don't know, I'm not suggesting to you that Forrest is a top guy, but the top guys at the UFC, it doesn't matter what department it's in. You know, if I call Craig Bisari right now, it could be anything UFC related, he'll get it done. And so, you know, that's an important thing at a company is that you go outside of your box, that you handle stuff. When something falls on you, you don't deflect, you handle it. And I feel to the amount that Forrest was given, he most certainly did that. You know, he showed up every day with nothing to do and didn't even have a desk to do it at. You know, he'd float around with who's sick today? You know, whose desk can I sit at to kill time? And finally, they brought him in on a meeting, and the guy delivered. I mean, I think it's a good story. You remember Burt Watson?
Yeah.
We rolling, baby!
Yeah, everyone remembers Burt Watson, I'm sure.
Burt Watson is another one of those stories, and I realize he's not with the company anymore, but he is still one of those stories. He was a guy that was brought in purely to get fighters from the airport to the hotel and back. But he opened his eyes, and he looks around and goes, wait a minute, I'm paid a full-time salary. This has taken me an hour. There's seven more hours in the workday, and he just started doing stuff. And before you knew it, he had an office. And before you knew it, he was in a room with President Obama. Do you know that story?
No.
Burt Watson goes from hired to drive a van to he works himself up, and not just on the pay scale. I'm talking about respect, where he had respect. He was overseeing stuff. You could trust him with stuff. And I don't know the story. I can't remember it. Burt told it to me. It was at a hotel somewhere. Secret Service vetted him, and next thing you know, Burt is face to face with the President of the United States. But that's a cool story. That's a dude that was given an opportunity, grabbed the bull by his horns, worked, wasn't afraid to work instead of just saying, "Who's going to pay me what?" And before you know it, we rolling, baby! Right? He was the man. Before you knew it, Burt's on stage.
Do you reckon he said that to the President? He must have.
Who? I hope he did. And Obama probably would have loved it. Frankly, Obama was cool enough. Like, what are you talking about?
He was a wacky character. And is he still working with in the fight sports? Is he still doing it? Because I know he went off to a few other shows, and then I lost track of what he's up to now.
And I did, too. And he was brought in by Joe Frazier. He's an old-time boxing guy. And I think that Burt probably got back to his roots of boxing. But I haven't heard. We should contact. I should have Burt on the show. We should get an update from him. All right, guys, listen. Wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be a great thing if you could have all the nutritious value of the wonderful meals that you see on Instagram and Pinterest? What if you could have all those foods right from the farmer's market delivered to your door to make those beautiful meals without all of the work, without having to chop it up, without having all the cleanup and the preparation? Well, now you can do it with Daily Harvest. Daily Harvest. Send the superfoods straight to your door. With Daily Harvest, it is insanely easy to prepare smoothies, activated breakfast bowls, as Mike Dolce loves. And you can do it all in just 30 seconds. Each cup comes ready to blend or to heat. Just add water. Or if you're feeling fancy, you can substitute other liquids like coconut or almond milk. Daily Harvest freezes all of their ingredients at the peak freshness, sealing in the nutritional value. All of Daily Harvest's produce is organic, it's unrefined, and it tastes amazing. Go to daily-harvest.com. Enter the promo code CHAIL. You will get 3 free items in your first box. Go to daily-harvest.com. Just use the promo code CHAIL. They will give you 3 free cups for free just for being a listener of this show.
Podcast One Sports presents Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. Every Tuesday, you can hear Jack Harbaugh.
We're going to attack this day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
Jim Harbaugh.
What the hell's going on around here?
And JT Rogan share their stories from on and off the field. Past guests include John Harbaugh, ESPN's Adam Schefter, and Pardon My Takes, PFT, and Big Cat. So don't miss an episode of Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. Every Tuesday, exclusively on PodcastOne.com and the new Podcast One app. Just a sample of what's coming to Podcast One Sports.
You're welcome. You're welcome with Jail Sonnen.
You look, I want to get into something with you, and I think now's a good time. You and I text back and forth, right? You're living across the pond. We talk on something you had me download, the kids call WhatsApp. You shared with me, and I'm not holding you to this, but you did share with me that you're going down to 185 pounds one last time, and then you're moving your career to light heavyweight. You did the fight at 185. Yep. Are you holding to that, or are you now a light heavyweight?
I'm a light heavyweight for sure.
Good for you.
Yeah, no, I am.
You stand 6 foot six. You probably shouldn't be at 185.
Yeah, and I've been doing it for a long time. I mean, I've had 27 competitive fights at 185. I did it since I was 20, 21. I've been trying to move to 205 for so long, but I've had fights been thrown at me that I just couldn't refuse. But every time I haven't refused and I've gone for the fight, they've not gone my way. I fought a Russian cat called, saying his name is a bit complicated for the Americans. I'm trying to think of it right now. Mamed Khalidov, who's probably one of the best middleweights in the world, but a lot of the Americans won't know him because he's not been in the UFC.
I would put him as high as six.
Okay, so high as six. So
that's where I would put him. He's definitely top 10.
So definitely top 10 in the world. And then when that name was put in front of me, I was trying to go up to 205. So my fight before that was at 205, and I won by first round knockout in Romania. And then I was given Mamed Khalidov as an option. And at that point, I was at the point where I could probably have gone back to the UFC. I was on a five-fight winning streak since I left the UFC. And someone said, do you want to fight Mamed Khalidov? And I was like, yes. Like, I'm not going to go into the UFC and get that opportunity to fight the big boys straight away. I need to see what can happen. And it was the main event in England, and it was a big, big event. Didn't go my way. I got stopped very, very early in the fight. It was a 20-second fight. First shot that I landed, I was out, which happens. Real, real tough thing to get over. And then I went back to 205. I fought in Poland, and I got a first-round knockout. And then I recently, last weekend or 2 weekends ago, I fought. I can't remember. I've been on holiday so long, I can't remember when it was. I fought a guy named Scott Askham, who's just come out of the UFC as well, who's another English guy at middleweight. And we had a three-round war, which was a close fight. But again, I didn't come out on top of that one.
Split decision?
He won. It went down as a split decision, but it was definitely he won 2-1. I won the third round, and I was taking over the fight, but it took me too long to get going in it. And I think that's, again, not to do the weight cut or anything like that, but I just feel like when I'm at 185, I'm built for endurance. I'm built for five-round fights. I'm built for the long haul. I don't really have the power to take people out early on, but 205, I feel like it's a more optimum weight for me. And just for my health, like you said, I'm 6'6". Making that weight drop is insane. And now I'm here, and I'm 220 now, and I've just been eating normally for a week. So, if I go keep going, I reckon I can get up to 230s and really make that weight drop.
Oh, good. So you're going to be one of those guys that moves up a weight but then gains the weight and is now stuck in the same position of having to take just as much weight. See, that was going to be my next question, which I was sure you were going to go, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to stay at 220 and only take off 15. Now you're already saying I'm going to gain 10 pounds.
No, but what I'm saying is my body as a... as a 6'6" athlete, if I start to eat and I put on the weight, maybe I'll put on 10 pounds. Like I said, I'll go 225, 230. That weight drop now is much more of a realistic goal to make to get to 205. Then right now I'm like, when I make 185, I am bones. That's all I am on my frame. I feel like I'm going to slowly put the weight on and go up to 230 over the next 5 years of my career, and I'll end my career at 230 making the big weight cut. But right now I'm going to be, my last time I fought at 205, I cut at 3 pounds. So it was 208 and I cut down to 205, actually because I was sick for 2 weeks before the fight, but I performed quite well there. So I think slowly I'll put the weight on. It's not going to be like a bit, I'm going to go put on 10 pounds and try and put on all this muscle mass, but I think my frame can support being 230, dropping to 205, whereas being 220 and dropping to 185. It's just too much.
Percentage wise, it is different too. You make a very fair point. So let's see. Tomorrow night, we got Kevin Lee taking on Tony Ferguson. Who do you got?
Tony Ferguson.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? I mean, you're very sure there. Why? How come you got Tony? Just a better fighter?
I just think he's a better all round athlete. Not a better fighter. I'm not going to use the word athlete because Kevin Lee probably is the better athlete. But I just think Ferguson's got it everywhere. I think he can mix it up much better than Lee. I know Lee's been tearing through people and looking fantastic. I think this is when that stops, and I think he's going to have a hard time.
Well, it's certainly a hard fight. Yeah, it could go either way. I don't know that I would challenge you there. One thing about Tony is he is in the five-round club. I mean, that's a very rare club. A lot of guys are scheduled for five rounds, but many guys will go their whole career and never actually go in there for 25 minutes Tony is in that group. Kevin hasn't done that. He's been scheduled for it one time. That was with Chiesa. That means he only trained for it one time. But he's never actually done it. A lot of people wonder, on any athlete, not just Kevin, a lot of people always wonder, can a guy do that? I can tell you from seeing Kevin in the practice room, he can. But me telling you, that really doesn't matter. He's either in the club or he's not. I think that that's one thing that could tip towards Tony. Would you agree with me? I mean, those rounds matter, right?
For sure. Those extra two rounds is a big, big deal. Not just physically, but like I say, he's never been there. He was scheduled for it, but he didn't quite. I think he finished the fight in the second round.
First round with Chiesa.
So, you know, mentally just going in there, getting into that first time being in that state. I remember that I've done, most of it done is four rounds. And I remember going from the third to the fourth round. It's a big deal, like in your mentality going into the fight. Whereas for Tony, it's just every day. You know, he knows his body's capable of it, and he can push the pace. So in those, you see sometimes now in the five round fights, the first it just kind of makes the whole fight slower. You know, everyone like they take a step off the gas, and the first three rounds is a bit slower. I don't think Kevin Lee will do that, but. You know, that could be detrimental if he goes in there thinking, oh, I got to survive the five rounds. If he goes in the deep, you know, I've got to. So he might slow down his pace and not be as aggressive, which I think is the way he beats Tony. If he comes in, he's aggressive and powerful.
Yeah, I agree with you. And see, that's where this round thing matters. And you get it, and I get it because we've done it. And I always wonder if when we talk about this, if I'm relaying this to the fans well. So to your point, when a guy changes his style, when he's worried about going 25 minutes, when he's used to only having to hang in there for 15, so he changes his style. Well, now all of a sudden you're changing with what got you there. So Kevin is faced with a choice. Does he change his style to extend that energy for potential 25 minutes, or does he come out like a drag racing car, like he usually does, go as hard as he possibly can, and most guys just can't keep that pace and they're done? That's what he's faced with. What the answer is going to be, we're going to have to see tomorrow night. I don't know. But I do get your point that he had better come out just like he did with Chiesa and everybody else that got him in this spot, which is hard, foot on the gas, worry about those later rounds later. Easy to say sitting here safe and protected in the studio, but that is what he's going to have to decide. It's not going to happen on the fly in there. He's going to have to decide it before he leads the locker room. How am I going to pace this? Am I going to play the game? Am I going to try to win rounds? Or am I going to look to stop this guy? And as young and brash as he is, if I had to guess, and there's an argument to be made on both sides, if I had to guess, he's going to go out there and try to stop him.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think that's the only way he can go into the fight and be successful. I think if he go, and it might end up being five rounds, but his fitness will carry him through it. But if he goes in with a mentality of, oh, I don't know if I can make the fourth and the fifth, then he just takes away what his biggest weapon is, which I think is his aggression and going in there and, like you said, pedal to the metal and going for it and trying to finish the fight. And he might get it with Tony, but Tony's a tough son of a bitch, and he might have to. This is the question. If he goes in there, go as hard as he can, and can't get the fight finished, Tony in the fourth and the fifth, he's still going to be there, and he's going to be going hard, you know. And he might have blown his load, and then he's going to be in trouble in the later rounds, which is why we're talking about the whole thing we're talking about. But if he worries about that, I don't think he's ever going to win. And I think his fitness will carry him through the fight.
Let me ask you this. Bellator is working towards a big fight. Paul Daly, MVP. I ask you this as a British man. How big is that fight? I mean, is that the fight that your fellow countrymen want to see? Is there bragging rights for England on the line?
Well, 100%. 100% there's bragging rights. But what, it's a similar situation to we're talking about GSP and Connor. Like, Paul Daly is a big name, but he's old now. Like, he's the old school. You know, not everyone knows him. Whereas the new fans in MMA, they all know MVP. He's got this flash style that everyone likes to watch. You know, he's got the gimmicks. But Paul Daly is a deadly, deadly fighter and has been for a very, very long time. So it's kind of like old guard against new guard of the division there in England. And it's a huge fight. It's the fight that Bellator need to make, especially over there in England. And it's a tough one to call. It's a real, real tough one to call. And I think it will really be like, who is the best welterweight we've got in England at the moment, really.
So MVP's the real deal. He's not just flash then. I mean, he can fight.
He can fight. He's flash, but he's backed up by immense skill. And I think that I'm not a big fan of being flash when you're fighting like that and trying to take away from what you're trying to do. If you're that good, just finish the fight is how I look at it. A lot of people look at it like it's entertainment. But he uses this style that he's created and crafted. But if you just took it down to the bare bones, I've been in the workout room with him, I've worked out with him, and he's incredible. Like, speed, athleticism, his distance, controlling his distance. That's all he's doing when he's doing all that dancing and movement. is he's reading reactions and he's controlling the distance. The way to beat the guy is to forget all that and just run at him and try and hit him and not and keep the pressure on him constantly, which Paul Daly isn't really going to do because he's not got that wrestling background, that wrestling base, which is the kind of thing that would be MVP's kryptonite. He has a ground game and he has the other skills, but he definitely excels on the feet in that dancing style. Paul Daly, his answer to everything is the answer we just recently saw, is that left hook. You know, if he can land and he can hit you, the power that man possesses in his hands is just natural. He just has it.
Did that surprise you that he got Larkin out of there?
Me and John McGuire, a good friend of mine, we had this discussion just before the fight, and I went for Larkin. I picked Larkin, and he picked Daly. He was like, no, Daly's going to knock him out round one. And I was like, John, come on. And John is pretty much always right when we have these discussions. But I just thought Larkin was a better, well-rounded guy. I thought he was bigger. Paul Daly's not the biggest welterweight in the world. I thought Larkin had fought the harder competition more recently. But he just finds a way. He's got that left hand. He just finds a way, Paul Daly.
Yeah, it did surprise me. I didn't make a pick because nobody asked me to, but had they asked me, I would have taken Larkin. I would have thought that Larkin could just drag him a little deeper. Larkin does fall down every now and then, but Luke, he always gets up. He's like a master of recovering. I just didn't think that Paul, you know, you did talk about Paul's age. I don't know that he slowed down, but that's coming sooner or later. That's a fair thing to look at. I didn't think he could get him out of there. My goodness, when I saw that, I was impressed. That made me want to see the MVP fight even more.
Well, the thing is that gets to me about these guys, like Daly's a great example. I call him like the older guard, is we all know what Paul Daly's going to do. There's no guess. He's not going to try and take you down. He's not going to do a leg lock. He's going to hit you with his left hand. So stay away from his left hand. But he manages to make it happen. So I thought with Larkin, he's a bit more of a new generation guy. He might have a few more, you know, he just might be able to avoid that from happening. But it's exactly what happened. It was a bit of a weird way it did happen, came off a spinning back fist. But still, like, I was very surprised that he managed to land it. And when you come like a guy who's intelligent and talented as Lorenz Larkin.
And MVP is a little bit new on my radar. You know, that fight with Cyborg is kind of what made him stand out for everybody, not just me. But what is his background? I met kickboxing? Was he just
karate.
A regular box?
Karate. I think it's a... I don't want to be, but it's like competition karate, like the style. I'm trying to think of another guy that does it, but it's all about distance. It's all about distance and speed. So it was point karate, I believe, is where he comes from. So, you know, for a guy that's as fast as he is, and he's fast. I mean, I've been in the workout room when he's been training with people, and he hits them, and they don't even know. Like, people don't even know that they've been hit. He's so fast, in and out. But if you watch him, he'll dance, and he moves in a very... Like he stands side on with his legs together like a karate guy and moves backwards and forwards. And he's just very hard to read. And it just makes him so interesting to watch. And he's been doing it for a long time. You know, like you said, the Cyborg thing really highlighted him to everyone. But he's been around knocking people out for a very, very long time. And he's actually making a move now. I know he's doing the Bellator thing, but he's now making a move. He's gone in with Haymaker Productions. He's doing boxing.
Oh,
he's going over to do a boxing fight before he's going to come back and do the Bellator thing. I think it's going to be 2018.
That's interesting. That's interesting that Coker released him to do that, but I'll support him. I'll go out and watch that. You know, you bring up that point karate. We've seen a few guys. MVP, who we're talking about now. Steven Wonderboy Thompson. Lyoto Machida. And for so long, we laughed at karate. Well, I mean, one thing that we did find out in 1993 when mixed martial arts came out was that karate doesn't work. But there is some exceptions to it. And Luke, it's the guys that actually went in as opposed to punching the air and getting their black belts through doing what's called kata, which means you punch the air and never break a sweat and have a guy in front of you. The guys that went out and came to that point karate system and learned some basic takedowns. But to your point, that stance, that sideways stance, moving straight backwards, moving straight forwards, hard to read, managing their distance. Those guys have created more goddamn problems for people than really anybody else I can think of. Even, you know, when Muay Thai came in or when Judo came in or the wrestler started, it's been these point karate guys that understand that distance, don't get tackled down to the mat, and then the opponent's left to try to figure this out on the fly because there's not a whole lot. I mean, I'll use my room, for example. We got a whole bunch of bodies in there. Not one of them does that. So if I was stuck in the ring, I'll use Machida because he's my size. I got one chance to figure that puzzle out, and it's live on television. That's not great.
And again, you know, like you said, they do it. It's like when you fight a southpaw. I know this is a very basic example, but you fight a southpaw, they're used to being a southpaw. You're not used to fighting this. You know, most guys aren't. And same with a karate guy. You're fighting this karate guy, and he's used to doing all that crazy stuff and moving his legs around and jumping up. You're not used to facing that. And yeah, you'll your mate will try and imitate it in the room that you train in. You know, he'll like do a crane kick or something, but it's not the same as these high level guys.
Because he saw Karate Kid.
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't know what to do, but he knows a crane kick.
So it's such a hard thing to do and find. And I find it, people find it hard to find bodies for me. I'm 6'6" at middleweight, like we said. So they'll try and bring it. They just bring in the tallest guy they know. They don't, but there's a whole style to being a tall fighter. There's a whole style to being a karate fighter. And if you don't have those people in the room, then you're in trouble. And like you said, you got to try and figure it out on the night. And it doesn't always go so well.
Do you stay in touch with Tor at all?
I do, yeah.
Through WhatsApp?
Yeah.
You don't ever get to see him?
This is not an American thing, WhatsApp.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's worldwide, but that's how you talk
worldwide,
to Tor.
Yeah. Tor's got a couple of kids now, and he's working real hard, and he's got a good life going on.
Tor is a smart guy. Tor did not ever need to be a fighter. I mean, he chose fighting, which was a really cool thing. But when we all got together, we all knew that, okay, that's the guy. That guy's smarter than all the rest of us. Remember when we did the boating thing? Bubba Jenkins or something suggested that, and Tor like put a boat together that...
He's like a scientific engineer or something crazy.
What was the rules on that? We're all in the house hanging out. I want to say it was like Thanksgiving or something. And all of a sudden, Bubba Jenkins says, in 1 hour, we're having a boat race. And
we have to build a boat.
Build a boat.
From things within the house, and it has to... go from one side of the pool to the other. I think that was it.
I think that was it. And they're going to race. Both boats go in the water at the same time. Whoever gets to the other side. They beat us in that. It was one of the few things they won. But, God, they did make a cool boat. Yeah, I mean, if we didn't have Tor, we would have just sunk.
They had, like, a spoon that, like, collected the water and then flicked it out. And they moved across. Yeah, it was pretty crazy what they had. But Tor came up with this whole propulsion system through gas. And we were just... We were out right there. I just sat down. I didn't even get involved.
Tor, take it over.
And that was my only Thanksgiving. That's the only time we've ever had Thanksgiving.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I might be having it next year when Jimmy, the other guy from the show, Jimmy Quinlan, he's getting married next year. So I'm going to be coming back to Boston in November. So I'll get a Thanksgiving. It'll be my second ever.
Jimmy's such a good dude. Did he become a cop? I know he always wanted to be a cop.
He's
officially a police officer.
Police officer.
Is cop
New
a bad
Hampshire.
Word? Is cop a disrespectful word?
I don't think it is. No.
I watched a show the other day and somebody said cop, and the mother of the character on the show said, be respectful, it's called police officer. I was like, is that true? We can't say cop anymore? There's so many new rules out there, but that one I had not heard.
I think you can't call them pigs. That's the one that you can't call them. But cop, I think, is fine.
I agree with you. Yes, pigs, I could tell you would not be right. All right, so Jimmy's a cop. Tor, father of two. He actually sent me a picture. Very cute family, by the way.
Yeah.
What else? King is still out there fighting.
Yeah, King's still out there doing his thing.
Cummings is still out there fighting.
He's still in the UFC fighting as well, yeah. You've got Uriah. He's still obviously up there.
Kelvin.
And Kelvin's about
still
to fight
on track
Anderson
to
Silva.
Be world champion.
Yeah.
He's going to win that fight, isn't he?
You can never bet against Kelvin.
Ever.
Ever.
It
ever,
surprised
ever.
Me that Weidman beat him.
I would, with Weidman, yeah, it surprised me. The one that I was surprised, if I'm going to be honest, was Tim Kennedy. When he fought Tim Kennedy, I just thought the guy was going to be too big, too strong, too just going to somehow get him to the mat. And he made it look so easy.
And Tim's amazing.
Yeah, and that's what, yeah. So I'm saying. So it's like how he did, I still don't quite understand it. And he knocked out Weidman, really, like in that fight. It was right at the end of the first round.
Yep.
And, you know, Weidman got his senses back and went on to win. But I thought I thought Kelvin would have won that one. But with Anderson, I can't see him losing.
It's hard to see how. I mean, at the same time, it'll be very impressive if and when he does beat him. But to your point, it's just hard to see Kelvin losing. I mean, it's like you said, the one thing he's good at.
He's winning. He's fighting.
Yeah, he's good at fighting.
He's good at fighting. He's not good at anything else. Not good at training. Not good at turning up. Not good at waking up.
He's terrible.
But he's
terrible
good
at those things. Not great with his weight cut.
No.
But boy, he's a tough son of a bitch. When that referee asks him if he's ready and he says yes, he means it. Luke, do you have anything else you want to get off your chest? Hopes, goals, dreams, fears, anything you want to share with us?
I got a lot of hopes, goals, and fears.
What do you got?
I don't know. That's the biggest fear I've got. I don't know what to do with my life. That's it. Now I'm fighting. I need a guru to tell me what to do.
And now you're married. So just floating around and doing your own thing isn't as easy as it once was.
Definitely not. I mean, I could definitely feel the difference now. We're staying at your place. And obviously now you're with Brittany. You've got Thero there, and you've got a baby on the way, and you're like, it's a different vibe coming into your house now when you're a family man, and you've got other people to put in front of yourself. You know, I remember when we first came over, and it was just you and your mom, and your mom would carry all of your stuff for you, make sure you had all your gear for training, and you were, you know, it was just so easy. Everything was so easy, and it's the same with me. Like now with Lucy, she's sitting about 2 feet away from me at the moment. You know, life becomes a little bit more complicated. It's not quite the same, especially as a fighter when you're traveling all over the world, training and doing what you're doing. I have to start thinking about other people now.
Structure and responsibility. That's what we've got in our lives now. That is our plight. And those are good things. We chose it.
Yeah. No, they are. They are. There's a lot more fear that comes with that. I think I don't have fear for myself. Obviously, I'm a fighter, which is a, you know, you can't really have much fear in that line of work. But now, with these things get introduced into your life, that's what I think. I think there's a lot more responsibility and structure, and I got to be more aware of that.
Well, buddy, it has been a pleasure. I have missed you. I'm so happy that you're in town. Thank you for joining us in here. For Luke Barnett, I'm Chael Sonnen. Enjoy the fights. We got Bellator tonight. We got the UFC tomorrow. And until next Wednesday. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Hold on a second. You did give me a prediction, Kevin Lee. No, you took Ferguson.
I went Ferguson.
Wait, give me one more prediction. We got Dantes versus Caldwell tonight.
Caldwell.
Really?
Yeah.
It's funny you say that because I also share your opinion. You tackle him. Is that what you're thinking?
Of course.
He's the underdog. Does that surprise you?
Really?
Yes, Dantes is supposed to beat Caldwell.
Nah.
I need to pick my words because I'm calling this fight. I got to be very unbiased. But it did surprise me. I think that's an okay thing to say, that Caldwell was the underdog.
Yeah, I think just all day long I'm going to take him down and then do what he wants.
Bet DSI, you can make some money on that. All right. That wasn't even a plug. That was two guys talking. See you all next week. This time I mean it. You are welcome.
Thanks for listening to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Hey, my name is James Petragallo.
I'm Jimmy Wisman.
Please join us every single Tuesday for Crime in Sports.
So fun.
You like sports?
You don't have to.
Let's just set up a context and find out what an idiot did wrong. What
I
do
like
you say?
It. I'm in.
We're going to do that each and every week. We take an athlete, we break him down, we make fun of everything he's ever done.
Yeah. But in order to do that, we have to build up and tell you all about their career and get you to what, James?
To grace.
That's
and then
right.
Watch them fall from grace.
Who doesn't
they inevitably
like that?
Do. Join us. Big criminals, small criminals, sports you've never heard of, doesn't matter. It's the crime. It's the comedy. It's such a good time. Join us every Tuesday for Crime in Sports.
You can join us every Tuesday at podcastone.com, the Podcast One app, or subscribe on all Apple products.
Find us every Tuesday and laugh at people.